taking a look at consumer scams and other kinds of consumer protection issues for the next hour here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, my guest Janet Jenkins, Administrator of Trade and Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture Trade and Consumer Protection. I hope you'll join in with your questions. If you have some, something bothering you, give us a call. The number, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Janet Jenkins, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, we're here in the midst of another season of tax preparation. What can you tell us about the tax refund anticipation loans?
Well, what a refund anticipation loan, referred to by the acronym RAL, is it's a loan based upon the tax refund you're supposed to be getting once you have your tax preparer fill out your taxes for you. A lot of people want their money, their refunds, immediately or within a day or two, and so they take out these refund anticipation loans that have a lot of different names. They go by, you know, tax refund advance, easy refund. I mean, there are, you know, all sorts
of
names, right? And the problem with them is that they're really expensive. They have high interest rates. Some of them are as high as 500%. Plus they have fees attached to them. Also that you can get your tax refund a little bit earlier, whereas if you have a bank account or open a bank account at a financial institution, many credit unions and other places, you can open one with, you know, maybe $5 balance or sometimes even nothing, and, you know, have your tax return prepared and e-filed, electronically filed, and have your refund deposited in your account, you'll get it within, generally, your federal refund within 10 days and your state refund in 4 or 5. So you can save a fair chunk of change just by being willing to wait a few extra days.
All right. So that makes really good sense to me. And there's a new law, isn't there, that forces tax preparers to get your permission before they sell information about you or me or whatever?
Yes. The legislature enacted a law last session that requires tax preparers to get your affirmative written consent before they can share any of your information with anyone else. I think a lot of people didn't even know that their tax preparers were or could share their information. I certainly never thought about
it.
And in fact, it's kind of like you'd think, well, they wouldn't be able to because that's pretty confidential and important information.
Right.
But they could, and they could sell it. And make some money that way. But now you have to agree in writing to that. And before you agree, they have to tell you what information they're going to share, with whom, what purpose the information is going to be shared for. Is it so that, you know, people can, you know, try and sell you a new car or whatever? And if you don't sign, they can't share your information. So it's a good way to keep some things private by, you know, making sure that your tax preparer, you know, that you tell them you're not going to consent and don't sign a form. Be sure to read any form that the tax preparer puts in front of you so you're making sure you're not giving consent.
Well, we have some callers online. By the way, you can join in with your question at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Dixie in New Auburn first. Dixie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey. I have a Gateway laptop computer that we purchased for my daughter for college, and we bought the 4-year warranty for it, and the computer isn't working. But we found out that the warranty has been sold to a company which is in bankruptcy. So what are my chances, or how do I go about getting repairs done to this computer? You know, who's going to honor the warranty?
Well, that could be difficult. Is there still a warranty left from Dell or from Gateway? Excuse me.
When I call Gateway and give them the serial number, then I automatically get a recording that says this warranty was sold to this company. I think it's MPC Computers, something like that. And then when I call that number, then I get the message that the company is in warranty, in bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And they only offer an email address to contact them through, and you don't get a response.
Okay. Yeah, you might not be able to, get anything collect under that warranty. One thing is there are several different kinds of bankruptcy. One is a Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which is a bankruptcy where the business, at least initially, doesn't intend to go out of business, but just intends to reorganize. So it comes out of bankruptcy still being in business. There's also another business, a Chapter 7, which is a straight liquidation going out of business. But in either event, you would have to file a proof of claim in the bankruptcy court about your concern about the warranty. But unfortunately, consumers and other unsecured creditors, those that don't have like a mortgage or a security interest, on the car, come last. So the chances that, you'll be able to get anything out of it are pretty slim.
So I guess the upshot is you go ahead and get it fixed and chalk it up.
That's about it. As unfortunate as that is, that's the problem. And we see a lot of that and get more questions about that given the economy where businesses are going out of business. Will they honor their gift cards, for example, or who's going to honor the warranties that are issued? And, if they go out of business, there's nothing much anyone can do.
All right. I'm sorry for that information, Dixie, but there you have it. We had not with computers, but on a travel agency that was a Wisconsin travel agency for many years, many, many years. Relatives had taken trips on it, and they took the money and then went bankrupt, and, you're out a couple thousand dollars.
Right. And sad, but true.
Yeah, unfortunately. Vanessa in Lancaster, it's your turn. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi. I'm calling about a payroll check that I just had stolen from me in my mail, and I am going through the process of prosecuting them, I guess, or figuring out who did it or whatever, but I was just wondering if there's any way that I could get my money back, too.
Where were they stolen out of your mailbox?
Yeah, just one. Yep.
Okay, and your mailbox at home, so they were in an envelope, or...?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and the best way you can... hope to get your payroll back is check back is one. Has the check been cashed?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. I called my payroll at my employer's and it was cashed about a week ago.
Okay. So they won't issue you another one?
No.
Okay. Well, do they know who stole it?
No, they're figuring that out now. They're running the checks at the bank that it was cashed at to look at the tapes, I guess, of whoever, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if they're prosecuted criminally, because it would be a crime, and the person is convicted, the court can order, and in most cases does order, restitution, which would be for the amount of the check. That's the most likely way that you can get it back. You can also bring a lawsuit once you find out who the thief is. But frankly, it's a lot easier and it's a bigger hammer over the thief's head to have it ordered as a part of the criminal proceeding as restitution.
Right. So the bank doesn't have some kind of insurance or something? Because, they probably shouldn't have done that in the first place.
No.
No.
That's it, yeah. So they don't have insurance or something like that to cover any mistakes they might make?
I don't know whether they have insurance or not. That's something you would have to ask the bank.
But under those circumstances, there are some scams that kind of relate to this, too, where people are wind up getting sent a check and they're asked to cash the check and they cash the check at the bank and... or wherever, and where whoever cashes it turns out not to be responsible.
Right. That has happened a lot, you know, and it's a typical example would be that somebody purchases something or sells something on eBay, and the purchaser sends a check, and the item price was $1,000, and the person sends a check for $1,500 and gives some kind of excuse about why it's $1,500, and so would you please cash the check and send $500 back because they really only owe you $1,000. And when you go deposit the check, write them a check for $500, only to find out that the original check for $1,500 isn't any good at all. And your bank doesn't have any responsibility under the law in those circumstances. Banks can only hold checks without cashing them or without sending them through for a limited period of time. So in many cases, the bank doesn't even know that the check isn't any good before it has to give you the funds represented by that check.
Oh.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling, and I'm sorry for your problems. That's a terrible thing to happen to anyone, especially in these economic times. Rick in South Range, your turn. Now, by the way, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. And Rick in South Range, we'll move to you now. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. I sent a question by email to the Kevin McKinley program this morning, and I should mention I'm thrilled to have him back on Wisconsin Public Radio. Mm-hmm. And the email question was sent back to me and recommended to ask you. And here's what I was inquiring. There's annual credit report, which is we all understand is free, and you can do this once a year at the three companies. But quite regularly on television, I hear something called, and it's very expensive advertising, free credit report. And if you go there and look it up, it's something like $12.95 a month, which certainly doesn't strike me as being anywhere close to free. Now, they don't hide this, but I'm just wondering what you know about free credit report.
It's not free because, just as you said, you have to pay. If you look at the fine print, if you can catch it as it's whirring across your screen, you're joining some kind of program with that. So you might be getting your credit report for free, technically, but only at the price of joining some type of program. The only place that you can get a free credit report that was provided for by Congress is annualcreditreport.com. So that's the place to go. And as you said, you can get a credit report from each of the three major credit reporting agencies once a year. So you can get actually three credit reports a year.
And even on that one, though, because I just did that for one of them, and I got a nice report and didn't cost anything. But then they said, but if you want your credit score, it was $4.95 or something.
Right. The law entitles you to your credit report, not your credit score. And as I understand credit scores, you wouldn't have the same credit score at all the credit reporting agencies. Different people use different, you know, programs or computations to arrive at a credit score.
Interesting. So there you have it, Rick. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Janet Jenkins, our guest administrator of Trade and Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. As we talk scams and other protection issues with her, give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Consumer protection issues on our mind today with Janet Jenkins of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We have lots of callers online, Janet, so we'll go right to the phones again and to Steve in Stevens Point. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you for the program.
Sure.
I love the topic. I have a friend who just deposited a payroll check into a local bank, and they apparently held the check until it cleared, only depositing $100 of the payroll check into her account. She had a whole bunch of checks bounced because of it. She wasn't aware that they were doing that. Is that a common practice for banks to do? Is there any kind of recourse that we can pursue?
Banks do typically hold checks for some period of time, and I think there's a maximum period of time. It's only, I would just be guessing, but that your friend can certainly find out by calling the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions as to what the rules about that are. But that is a fairly common practice, not as common with payroll checks as it is with insurance checks. As it is, if you use your ATM card, they'll put a lock on a certain amount of money, and often it's like if you use it at the gas station, and often the amount of money that they lock is more than what you owe for your gas purchase, and that will stay on for a couple of days. But I really would suggest that your friend contact the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions and talk to one of their consumer folks, because you know, you can get the right answers from them. And it may or may not be true that the bank did something it wasn't supposed to do.
I had something similar happen to a friend of mine, and he went back to the bank right away, and he was really mad about it. And the bank actually didn't, of course, charge for the overcharge, and then sent a letter that could be sent to the places where the checks bounced. So they went over and above, I think, to try and help that customer out of a situation that wasn't the customer's fault.
Yeah, that's clearly something that your friend ought to do, is to talk to the bank. Has he or she done that at this point?
I think we lost our caller. Oh. Yeah, we lost our caller.
Okay.
Yeah, and if they haven't, they certainly ought to be contacting the bank, because the bank should be helping out on this. I mean, for sure, there shouldn't be any bounced check charges, and they should also be providing a letter so that the person's credit doesn't get
well, and an explanation besmirched, so that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Bill in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Two quick things. The last caller, I've had accounts at six different banks in Wisconsin, and I thought it was banking law that payroll checks and government checks are immediately accepted for deposit. So it might be something your guest may want to look into.
Yeah.
Second thing is that lady, two calls ago, came in the middle of the conversation about her lost check. But I thought that Wisconsin had a victim compensation law where the state would reimburse her lost money.
Well, the state does have a victim's compensation fund that does pay certain victims for certain types of things. I don't pretend to know the ins and outs of that, but in order to be a victim, the first thing that has to happen is that someone has to be convicted of a crime before you can be even eligible for that fund. And I don't believe that the fund covers every monetary loss that every victim of every crime may have. So, but again, I do think the best way to go through it is to ask for restitution.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for calling, Bill. We'll go to Stephanie in Beloit next. You can join in open lines again to get you on at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And Stephanie in Beloit, your turn. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi there, Larry. Happy New Year
to you as well.
And your guest. I'm calling because this full-page ad appeared in our paper in November, which I thought was a total scam, and I've been wanting to send a copy of it to somebody like Janet, is it?
Yes.
To see if it needs to be pursued. It starts out, big headline, cut off set for free universal health card.
I know exactly what ad to which you're referring, because, we are taking a look at it, because a number of us looked at it and said the same thing. What we have found, and we haven't investigated it completely, but what we do have indicates to us that there's real problems with it. You know, it talks about, you know, you have access to over, you know, to hundreds of thousands of doctors and dentists mm-hmm. and hospitals. We looked and did contact some of the alleged providers that in Wisconsin, and many of the, all of them don't accept that card.
Uh-huh.
And some of them have never even heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you need to be really careful. And, you know, a full page ad is expensive. And therefore, a lot of people might think, well, this must be the real deal. But it isn't. And these kinds of cards have been offered in the past. You know, and if you see something like that again, fortunately, we happen to catch it, too. But please call us at Consumer Protection so that, you know, we're sure we're aware that something like that is out there so that we can warn people. And in fact, on this one, we did issue an alert for people telling them what we had found out.
Oh, very good. Well, it was very suspicious because there was no amount of money listed as what you should send, and it was a phone number only, you know, all those red flags.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thanks a lot, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling. Bob in Franklin, we're on to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi. My question is about phone bills.
Okay.
My mother recently got a bill with a charge on it that she and I did not recognize. Had no idea what it was for. And when we called AT&T, they said they couldn't do anything about it. We had to call the number for this outfit and deal with them.
You mean the number of the number that the call was from?
Well, it was a charge from an outfit called ILD Teleservices.
Okay.
And they told AT&T said they couldn't do anything about this charge, that we would have to contact ILD and deal with them.
Do you know what ILD is?
Not exactly, no.
Okay. There are some laws about that, but I, you know, there's not enough information for me to give you a good answer. You know, there used to be a practice in the past that phone companies would add on bills of other people to phone bills. I didn't haven't heard of any recently, but yours might be one. I would really encourage you, Bob, to file a complaint with Consumer Protection with us so that we can take a look at it.
Yeah, I went on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and all I had to do is put ILD in there, and I found thousands of complaints.
Okay.
I just did the same thing.
I'm sorry?
I just did the same thing. I went online, and there are lots of complaints about ILD.
Yeah, and in her case, they added a charge for directory assistance. And I think she has no idea how it got there. And I think they targeted her because she's older and she's legally blind. So she gets free directory assistance.
Yeah. Unfortunately, scammers do tend to target people who are vulnerable, and many seniors are vulnerable. But I would, you know, I do encourage you, please, to file a complaint with us so we can take a look into it to see whether or not AT&T should properly be having that item on its telephone bill.
I guess the gist of my question is, what is AT&T's responsibility? We tell them it's unauthorized, and they tell us it's not their problem. Take care of it yourself.
No.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that. You know, we've got the contract. You know, we're dealing with AT&T as our supplier, and they're sending us a bill with this stuff on it.
Yeah, I agree with you, but that happens a lot of times. That, you know, people say, not my problem. You figure it out. So, I mean, and that's a situation where we might be able to help with AT&T, given the fact that we're a state agency, you might also consider telling them that you're going to switch your phone service.
Well, I did that.
Good for you.
I threatened to file a complaint, and I told them I was going to contact Four on Your Side. And all the AT&T said was, it's not our problem.
Well, you might file a complaint with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection.
I think I'll do that, because it doesn't sound like a lot of people know about this, except for on the Internet.
Another one, you might even, your state representative, send a little note off to your state representative, wouldn't hurt either.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, whether or not it would help, it would make you feel better, and if the representatives get enough of those kinds of calls, maybe they maybe there's more that can be done. The number to call, by the way, the 800 number for the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection is 800-422-7128. 422-7128. Thanks, Bob, and good luck. Lillian in Montello is next. Hi, Lillian.
Hi. I've got a friend who got sick and got behind on paying some bills, and you know, wound up not paying some. They got sent to credit agencies.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to, you know, help her get things cleaned up and squared away and all. But you know, we were wondering about, should she get a, you know, deal with a, go through a credit counseling agency? Is, you know, there any way to get, like, you know, pay back what the, I mean, she's out of work and stuff, too, so she doesn't have much money.
So she's trying to figure out how to pay her bills.
Yeah, and she's got these ones that were, you know, some credit card bills that went unpaid, and then, of course, you know, late fees and interest got...
Yeah, understood.
Well, she could talk to a credit counseling agency. In that regard, I would suggest that she check them out. You know, you see a lot of ads on TV about how they can reduce your monthly payments to one, and that one is going to be significantly cheaper. Mm-hmm. Not all of them can deliver or do deliver what they promise. So, you know, try and you know, check them out to see. You can, again, you can contact us at Consumer Protection, and we can tell you whether we've had any complaints against a particular counseling agency that you might be considering. Also, depending on what your friend would like to do, as well as the amount of her bills, she might want to consider talking to legal aid about a potential bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you hate to do that, but does the county social services or organizations like that provide some? Can they provide some sort of financial, not money, but at least advice of that sort?
They can. I don't know how far they would get into it,
yeah.
But they may very well know, you know, who the good credit counselor or legitimate, reputable credit counselors are in your area.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I missed that. What agency?
The social services agency in your county.
Okay, that's a state agency?
No, it would be it would be your county agency, like, you know, your human services agency or social services agency. Every county has one. So if you just take a look in the phone book or online at the various departments within your county, I'm sure you'll come across it.
Yep.
Okay. So do those the credit agencies, you know, the ones who keep calling and stuff, when they take over something like that, do they get a portion of what's recovered?
That's how it works.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how it works. And that's why they'll keep after you for...
ever.
Forever, for a long time. So good luck to your friend, Lillian, and I hope this helps. Appreciate it very much. Mary in Madison, it's your turn. Mary, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
The reason that I'm calling, I get a lot of those Nigerian bank scam emails, and I always, they go through my spam filter, and sometimes I'll read them just to see how ridiculous they are, and sometimes I just delete them, but I'm not sure if it's like filtering and reporting it to anyone. Well, today I got one that piqued my curiosity because it said it was from the FBI. Yes. And it said that beware of scams or phony things like that. All they needed me to do, and I'm smart enough not to ever fall for these, but is there some legal ramifications for posing as the FBI now?
Sure.
Or who would I forward this? Because I get a lot of these. And, I mean, I don't know if there's a place to forward them for them to be investigated.
You can forward them, first of all, to your closest FBI office, or you can forward them to the Federal Trade Commission, which has taken or attempted to take action against some of these people. The difficulty can be is, one, in locating the people who are sending these kinds of emails, and two, extraditing them from the country that they're in order to prosecute them here in the United States. So, but yeah, you can forward it to the Federal Trade Commission.
Okay, so that would be the best place
that
to forward it to?
It would.
Okay, because I get them, you know, probably once or twice a week. I just can't believe that there's possibly still people that would fall for this anymore.
It's amazing, but they obviously, you know, still are working or they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, and in this day and age, it doesn't cost them any, you know, the cost is almost nothing.
Right.
To send out hundreds of thousands of those to hundreds of thousands of people. And if, you know.
Just one or two.
One or two.
Yep. They make money.
Thanks, Mary. Ken and Milton, on to you now. Ken, thank you for calling.
Yes. I was wondering what tenant rights are concerning cable TV. I understand that the FCC has changed the rule recently, but I'm talking about a situation where the landlord will not allow the an antenna on the property to get a cable company that needs that a different antenna.
So something like Dish Network or
correct? He won't allow a Dish antenna on his property.
I'm not aware of any law that would require a landlord to put up a dish at the request of a tenant.
No, the cable company will do the dish and all of that, but you need permission.
Understood.
But I don't think there's any law that requires a landlord to give that permission.
The law, I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
I don't think there's a law that would require the landlord to give permission to have that dish or even cable for that matter.
What's the use of the law then?
Well, that's an issue that would have to be addressed by Congress. Currently it's the landlord's property, and so the landlord doesn't have to allow a dish.
No, doesn't have to. All right, Ken, thank you for calling. Ed in Wautoma, we're on to you now. Hi, Ed.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a situation where I live in Wautoma, and I received a CAP loan to rehabilitate my homestead property. And I hired a contractor out of Wautoma, two guys. Well, one has since taken off for Arizona, but they gave me a proposal to do the work at, I think it was $9,800. But then they charged me and got the checks from CAP Service and added an extra $5,000 to the bill, which I, of course, have to pay back. And they had a claim that there was extensive labor beyond their original proposal, which I signed no amendment that they would be extensive labor or pay any more. And the work they did was exactly what their proposal had said they would do. And they also added a $2,500 worth of additional materials that they refused to show any receipts for. And when the worker from CAP service tried calling them numerous times, they wouldn't answer the phone and wouldn't respond to a registered letter. So I went to the Washer Sheriff's Department, talked to a detective. I had first spoken with an attorney who told me that it's a case of theft by contract, you know, that I hadn't signed an amendment authorizing an additional $2,500 worth of labor or an additional $2,500 worth of materials. I mean, when you put a new roof line on and so forth on a house, it's not rocket science. You can only use so many shingles and so many sheets of Blandex and so many sheets of plywood and so forth. But the detective suggested that I contact the consumer agency in Green Bay, and I you know, took photos of the house and the letter from the environmental specialist, and his opinion of work he saw was substandard. And the detective was going to go to the district attorney in Wautoma and see if he would be interested in prosecuting the case under, you know, theft by contract, what my attorney said that to him it looked like.
Yeah.
But it's kind of got stalled. I'm wondering, do I have a leg to stand on in this? Or, you know, to me it's like as if I would tell somebody I can blacktop your driveway for $5,000 and I do half of it and take the whole $5,000 and say, well, it was expensive labor. I had to rake more pebbles than I thought I had to. And
yeah, I understood what you mean. What do you say, Janet?
There is a law, and the theft by contractor is a criminal part of the law. And the law indicates that, you know, all contracts for home improvements have to be in writing, and they have to set forth specifically what's going to be done, what the cost is, those types of things. So that law could very well have been violated. Have you heard from our Green Bay office at this point in time?
I gave the information, you know, I did the double, I think they wanted duplicates of everything. I took photos, I had duplicates of everything, and I gave it to the detective at Washera County, but I haven't, you know, and then I went about my business, and I've called him a number of times, and he's been busy, you know, doing other things, so I really don't know whether the district attorney is going to prosecute, you know, these people, or whether the detective, you know, he's got the basic papers for the Consumer Protection Agency, so I haven't gotten them back from him yet. Mm-hmm. I thought my first, but he suggested that's what I do.
I would also suggest you file a complaint with us, and we will take a look into it to see if the home improvement law has been violated.
So, and to do that, just call the... Well, you can go online, too.
You can go online and file and get a complaint form. There's a special home improvement complaint form. Or you can call the Green Bay office, we certainly will take a look at it. That would be a different proceeding, although than the criminal proceeding by the district attorney, although many times we will refer these types of cases to the local district attorney for prosecution.
Well, good luck to you, and thanks, Ed, for calling. Appreciate your call. Dan in Milwaukee, we're on to you next. Hi, Dan.
Hello. This last summer, I had a huge new patio put on my house, and they took out the old one, put a new one, paid them in full, and now they haven't paid the cement people, and now the cement people are trying to put a lien on my house.
Right. The cement people, as a subcontractor or a supplier of materials, do have legal rights to do that. Did you get certain notices from either your contractor or the cement folks that they what their lien rights were at the beginning of your project?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. The law does, in order for liens to be placed on property, certain notices need to be given. So you could check with a private attorney about whether or not the cement supplier has a right to place a lien. But just like with Ed, the last caller, this could very well be a theft by a contractor. So you should contact your local police and file a complaint with them.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Dave in Ormond Beach, Florida?
Yes. Good morning.
Morning.
Where it's 78 degrees here.
Don't tell us about it.
Sorry about that. Well, I've got some information that'll warm up a few people up there. This is in regards to a call you had about three calls ago about placement of over-the-air reception devices.
Yeah.
Such as direct broadcast antennas and MMDS antennas, things like that. And I'm holding the FCC fact sheet in my hand here, and they cannot restrict placement of these antennas if a renter has exclusive control of an area, such as a patio or a balcony or something like that, or a small patch of the yard, if that's exclusive to that particular unit. And this is from the FCC webpage. If you want the address, I can give it to you.
The web address, sure. Thanks
right.
for the information.
Sure, it's fcc.gov/MB, that's Mike Bravo, /facts, facts/OTARD.html. And there's a printout there, and this has been in effect since May of 2001, that landlords cannot restrict the installation of one of these devices in a
patio situation.
Well, so what you're saying, as I understand it, is if it's your normal apartment building and there's no exclusive patio for your apartment or there's no exclusive yard space for your apartment, then the landlord can restrict it. But if you, like, have a patio off your own apartment, then the law says that they cannot restrict it. Is that?
That is correct.
Okay.
Or a balcony or any
right.
little patch of dirt.
But not the roof.
Not the roof because that's not exclusive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Dave, thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate that very much. So that earlier caller, if the dish would work on his patio, he'd be well in his rights to have it installed.
That's what it sounds like.
Take some more calls here. By the way, Janet's going to be with us right up until 12 o'clock today, and then we'll be getting your ideas for future programs after noon here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking consumer protection issues with Janet Jenkins of the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Janet, Paul in Grafton emailed us, and here's what he has to say. Last year, I moved my office out of a space I'd been renting on a month-by-month basis and gave 60 days' notice. The landlord got a new tenant immediately, turned out to be somebody I knew. In a verbal agreement with the new tenant, I let him start to move some stuff in early, and he allowed me to leave behind it for a few weeks some machinery, which I had sold but which had not yet been picked up by buyers. The agreement was between me and the new tenant. The landlord was never even involved in the discussion. After not receiving my $750 deposit, about 6 months or so later, I wrote to my landlord. He replied that he decided to retain the entire deposit as payment for the storage of items that had been there with the permission of the new tenant. There'd never been a letter or a phone call from the landlord during the time the items were there saying he was charging a storage fee. His reply to my letter was the first I'd heard from him since I left the space. As far as I can tell from the state law, in order to charge me for storage, he would have to have sent a letter of this intention to charge for storage while my items were still there. He didn't and freely admits that. Sent another registered letter to him, but 6 more months have passed without response. What's my next step?
Well, you can file a complaint with us because it does sound like your landlord acted improperly. Or you can take your landlord to small claims court and try to collect what is owing to you. It appears that there may have been several problems with what your landlord did. And with this kind of violation, the law does permit you to recover double the amount that you've been out, and also pays for reasonable attorney's fees. So you might want to, you know, you
I'd take them to small claims.
I would too, and I would collect. So I would check with an attorney who's familiar with landlord-tenant law and go after him.
All right, that's a good email. Let's go to Nathan in Green Bay. Nathan, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Great show. I just had a question about the early termination fees on cellular phone contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Some years ago, I had a contract with a company, and I just found the service to be unsatisfactory. I had a lot of dropped calls. I had to constantly be editing my bill for things that I shouldn't have been charged for. So I terminated the contract, and I've heard things say that those aren't entirely legal, those fees. And it was, I think it was about $150 or $200. And now that's currently in collection. So I was wondering what I should do about that.
I don't know. I mean, as far as I know, cell phone companies can charge early termination fees, although many of them are now either reducing the amount of the fee or prorating it to the amount of time you have left, or just not, you know, charging it at all. I know that there have been some attempts at the federal level, which that where it would have to come from at with respect to legislation concerning early termination fees. But as far as I know, they're legal. If they were part of the contract you entered into with your cell phone carrier.
Okay, so just the unsatisfactory service, that doesn't factor into it at all?
No, but you can argue that with a small claims court judge or court commissioner and say that that's the reason. And it may very well be that the judge or the court commissioner may say, well, you know, you didn't provide adequate service, so I'm not going to, you know, let you collect this fee. I would certainly go to court and raise that issue. The worst thing that can happen is that the judge will say you owe it, but you might luck out and have the judge say, you know, using his or her discretion, say, no, you don't have to pay it.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much for calling. Let's see. We heard from Trin having to do with the free credit report. After listening, I just went to annualcreditreport.com, requested my credit report. I was able to print it off and review it within minutes. You may want to mention that many inquiries are made into your credit report to see if you qualify for other credit cards or services, resulting in the junk mail that we receive with different loan consolidation or pre-approval for credit cards. There's a phone number to call to stop companies from checking your credit report without your knowledge, and I believe the number is displayed on your report. Just a note to mention. Is that correct, as far as you know?
There is a voluntary program through the Direct Marketing Association and with the credit card companies about stopping unwanted pre-approved credit card offers. And I've done both. And although it hasn't stopped all junk email, it has stopped, you know, 90% of it. So it is useful.
And let's talk a little bit, too, about scams during with this economy. We've got a couple minutes left anyway, Janet.
Well, there, you know, as I think I mentioned earlier, scammers and con artists tend to prey on vulnerable people. And there's a lot more people today that are vulnerable financially because of the economy. They, you know, they've lost their job. They've lost their health insurance, which, you know, I think is part of the reason for that full page ad that we talked about earlier. So some of the things that I think we need to look out for even more, and things we'll be looking out for at Consumer Protection, are job scams where people, you know, are offering you to work at home, and sometimes the things they want you to do are illegal, but you probably wouldn't know that. Business opportunities, fraudulent business opportunities. You know, you'll see a lot of ads and get information, you know, come and have your free dinner at this hotel and we'll give you a pitch about how you can make a lot of money in the stock market at this point, or make money off of mortgage foreclosures. So you need to be careful about those, because I think we'll be seeing more and more of them. I know I got in my email for the last several days in a row at home, you know, a thing saying I've won a free Walmart gift card for $1,000. And just out of curiosity, I checked, I clicked on it to open it, and it turned out not only I was receiving a free JCPenney gift card for $1,000. Most of those types of things are the phishing scams, where they want you to give up your personal information, such as your Social Security, which then they can, you know, steal your identity. So you do need to be more careful, particularly with respect to anything that promises money, because that's what people who don't no longer have jobs need. So be careful.
Janet, thank you so much. We'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
And call the Consumer Protection Hotline number at 800-422-7128. Coming up in our last half hour, we'll be getting your program ideas for this 11 to 12:30 time slot here on the Ideas Net.